live recording. How's it going?
Good. Good to see you, Malev.
It's good to see you too. We're back in the Relic Buds seat. Mm-hmm, in the Relic Buds position. Been a little bit. Episode 5. Lots of things have been happening. Like all those things we were talking about.
I ran up to Canada to visit in-laws. And during that time, I spent like the whole time just drawing Ogsoul monsters and coloring and making all the art for the faction. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And
during that time,
very productive.
The Metal Masters, the master casts of the new sculpts, also arrived.
Yes.
Down at Malev Mini's studio.
That's true. We started painting them on the Twitch. Took a little while to like fumble through the first like scheme. I don't know if I told you. I might have mentioned it briefly.
Tell me in detail, because all I got was a message that was like, we're getting there.
But I didn't do
that first stream.
There was, so I designed the scheme and it was kind of like looking at your art and I was like, cool, I'm gonna do something kind of like that to keep it a little, but maybe not exactly the same. So I just look in it, Procreate palette, and I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna do these, this, kind of following the same logic that I use for most of the Relic paint. And I select several paints, get them all ready to go live, start painting them and stuff. And there was just a moment, and I think it's actually clipped. I should probably share it, and I might be able to like edit it in later, because you could straight see it on my face. I occurred to me that I was painting the exact same scheme that I did for the Akkad Goblin, like the exact same scheme almost. And because it only, but so as soon as I put the orange down, I was just like, huh? And I was like, no, this is the same thing. And I was like, oh no, everybody. I spent like an hour and a half thinking about this scheme and admiring it because I already did it. It's like, it was just this weird locked in my brain thing. And so real time live, I was like, all right, we got to pivot. There's elements that we want to keep. There's elements that we got to change in which direction. It ended up being pretty fun.
It's funny. There is like a, like they rhyme the in a aesthetic that you've got the goblins, but they're like fuzzy dog goblins.
Yeah, big guys.
And now you've got these trolls that are like fuzzy ape men. And so in a lot of ways it's like the two things are aesthetically similar in that they're kind of a staple of fantasy, but also they're I don't want to say furry, something else, but yeah, they're like
hairy
like goofy beast creatures,
and they are very goofy and unique, super unique, like these models, looking at them like, and then telling my brain those are Relic Blade models, you know, in the Relic Blade world. Because we talked in, I think, previous episode about how you kind of had to tool the proportions and solve some other things about making them fit into the Relic Blade world that might have not been just like super straightforward. But now looking at them, I see those consistent elements with like their legs and their shoes. Those have very similar like just the little leg muscles and the knees and the shoes and the arms, they all feel very, very Relic Blade musculature with these guys and stuff. But the fact that they have this huge like humpback, like hunchback, and their heads are so big, it's interesting to look at them next to like the Moldorf, because the Moldorf has, or I'm looking at the Archaeologian specifically, it's very like square. You know, there's just like a little stunted square character. And these guys they're short and stunted, but they also have that, like, they could stand up taller almost vibe. Cause, you know, like, they're, it's that monkey aesthetic the
yeah, because they got the long, long gangly arms.
And, yes. But their heads are incredibly huge. When people get like y'all, when you get these models and you start painting these huge faces, like they could straight up swallow like some of the characters when you look at it.
That's that's true. So all right, cool. So yeah, you've been painting. I've been coloring. We also have been playtesting. And so yeah, it's been a pretty productive couple of weeks leading up to this and like putting a lot of the finishing touches on getting these ready as a release. And it also ties in really closely with the release of the solo, because the models in this release are the wild monsters from the solo campaign.
Yep.
And so that solo campaign is done, but it's waiting on being able to have photography of the new miniatures in it. And so it's funny. Just all of the
moving pieces,
all of the moving pieces, and how like no single piece.
Yeah.
I could have finished writing it ages ago, but you know, without that last element, it's not done. And with miniatures, it's such a funny thing because, you know, miniature photography in a Warhammer book or whatever, you love it. Like I love it. I love seeing it. But it also is easy to forget like how much work goes into it.
Yeah.
Because you think, oh, well, it's a photo of the figures. Like that's it. But it's like not just that. It's also, it's the concept art. It's the rules. It's the sculpture. It's the 3D prints. It's the 3D prints that are the wrong scale, redoing the scale, redoing the details, putting them into production, you know, getting the masters, getting the studio paint jobs done, and then finally setting those figures on a table and realizing you've got nothing unless they're sitting on terrain, sitting under lights, sitting with the background, and like
all of those extra details.
It's so much work. It's hilarious. It's like way more work than an illustration. But at the same time, you're not making a miniature game unless you're making...
Unless you kind of have those
figures. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, that's not a true statement. Because you can write a miniature game without producing miniatures for it. But like,
or taking photos of them.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but it's a hallmark for me. So it's like one, it's a way that I'd love to express it. You know,
as creators that this like indie game that's like really fully realized, that's part of it, is like producing a range of models that you're going to have nice photos of and like capture the imagination of what it looks like while it's being played. So anyways, it's funny to be hung up on that last bit, but there's so much other stuff. Like I was going through my like checklist to this morning and being able to like, you know, mark stuff off that I was able to complete in the past day. But there's so many moving parts getting ready for this release, and I'm so out of practice for it because it's been a while since I've released the product, and I'm starting to look at some of the numbers and really wondering if I can do it without a Kickstarter. But I don't know, we'll see. Like it could be last minute, I'll just be like, all right guys, we're gonna do like a 1 week Kickstarter just to try and get like the basic funds to order enough cards, you know.
But, I've got plenty of ideas about ways that we can do it, or at least ways that would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about where we're at with the figures right now, we've got they're pulling double duty now, because last time we were talking about them becoming a faction, but now you've gone away and you've explored the faction and designed the cards that are actually in it. We've been playtesting them. What are some of the things that when you went away that you were able to bring to the Relic Blade table of cards and upgrades, you know, and also like the design for the characters, like what exactly makes them different from like a battle or something.
Yeah, that's a funny. I think that was one of the first questions that
came up.
Like, kind of, well, yeah, kind of an abstract question. Like, doesn't Relic Blade already have orcs because it has battle pigs?
Yeah.
You know, and aren't these orcs in a way? And I think that's sort of an abstract question, but it also makes sense. Like, what is different between an ape and a pig?
Well, yeah, because there's that question, right? Uh-huh. From the mind of the designer. But then there's also, like, the Relic Blade difference. How do they operate?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's the thing is, like, pigs have 3 AD, and they are inexpensive. And they occupy an important space between the, like, low-level team characters or companion characters like a Billman or a Lone Guard Watchman, right? Where those guys are not hero level characters. And then you've got hero level characters that typically have 4 action dice. And so battle pigs have 3 action dice and they're much cheaper and you don't get as many bodies as if you were playing like an all goblin list with lots and lots of teams. But you get more bodies than if you're playing all heroes. Anyway, so pigs actually like really occupy an important game design space as far as Relic Blade rules. And so coming in with the ape clans, I knew that I wanted them to have 4 AD, but also have the team. So they're more typical in that way. And then also the lore for them is very connected to the Algaroth, the god that like formed them from being apes to being like a warrior tribes, and then also the barbarian keyword being able to make them more of a barbarian centric faction that focuses a lot on that, and then also in my imagination, they always had rune magic where they'd like be etching magic words on things. And so through those like key points that had formed in my imagination about the ape clans with the Ogg-Sul faction set, I was able to come in and really explore those keywords. So I've got the barbarian upgrades, warlord upgrades, and some universal upgrades in there. The universal upgrades are the runes and a potion. There's 2 barbarian only tactics, and then a 2 warlord upgrades, an item and a tactic. And so those things have been really cool way for me to make barbarians have more options, make warlords have more options, which gives both the Lone Guard and the Battle Pigs a new boon in playstyles for players that have those armies. And then also the runes, the universal upgrades obviously are going to be a big part of just everyone's ability.
Yes.
Like the stone rune, for example, that makes it so that you don't suffer -1 AD when you're critically wounded. I think that like endurance rune is going to be an interesting space for as a 1-point upgrade, because there are lots of 1-point upgrades at this point to choose from. And like, how do you choose between a magic ring or a healing herb or a raven brooch or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Caustic vial or whatever. There's a lot of good options. And so this just expands that so that you can really focus on what the character is for on the battlefield and reinforce that skill set for that character.
I think that the runes have been a really exciting addition, because I mentioned to you that I've always been into rune casting and stuff. When you went away and then you shared the first draft of the card file without the illustrations, I was like, ooh, runes, getting in runes now. Yeah, it opens up a really fun space to just give all types of characters. Because, I mean, it's a 1-point upgrade that if you put on... because can the saber... I don't think the saber secret, but I think, like, the shadow box can. Does have a broken.
Yeah, the 4 health characters can. So, like, the Lungard Watchman would be a good candidate, because with only 2 AD,
it becomes really big.
Yeah, they're pretty much just, like, fumbling around the battlefield at that point, crawling around.
Very reactionary. They get reduced. Just 2 or 1 AD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be a good upgrade for the teams that have 4 health. So that's a cool one. We've got Iron Crown, the Warlord upgrade that makes that the Warlord can spend allies' dodge tokens.
And is there an ability, it's called Staunch Defender, which is revert, right?
Yeah.
Is that Staunch Defender? Or is that Guardian? I think that's Guardian. That's up to 3 health. Yeah, that's up to 3 health. But, I think the Warlord has it, Lone Guard Warlord. Yeah. But it's dodge tokens out to friendly.
Yeah, exactly. You can pass out dodge tokens.
So it's a little bit of a reversal.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Staunch Defender. That's what it's called.
Got it.
And it's the same range, right? Allies within 3 can spend your dodge tokens with Staunch Defender, and so now allies within 3 you can spend theirs if you give them the Iron Crown. And on your feet is also going to be a really cool Warlord upgrade that gives you the chance to give +1 on recovery rolls to allies within 4 inches. And that's a really cool one for any faction, of course. But particularly, I think it's going to be really good for pigs.
Yes, comboing with that.
Since a lot of them are tough, it's really going to be...
Going to put intense. A whole new emphasis on pig swarms, because I've been playing pigs for a long time, and I've been doing kind of decent. I made a little like pig neutral list, I think, like a
show foot,
and it was doing pretty good. But I historically, with the full pig list, get beat.
Yeah, it can be tough. I think pigs need to get revisited.
Well, that's what's great about.
There are a couple of things, and I really believe in their like core design, but also like I think there's room for them to be a little bit stronger.
And that's what's great about being able to introduce cards into the range that when you put them
it's funny, you know, the way upgrade cards come in other packs, I think, can be perceived as like a weird marketing ploy. Where, you know, upgrades you need for your X-Wing are in a different set, and so you're just forcing people to buy stuff. But that may be true for some big companies, I guess. But the reality is, even in a large company, you have game designers trying to make a fun game.
Yeah, and trying to address things.
You can't just have it all already written. You have to come up with ideas. And so that's part of it, is like with this set, I looked at it as an opportunity to, you know, help the Battle Pigs or help the Lone Guard by giving those Warlord upgrades, help the Barbarian class be filled out a little bit more and more flavorful. And so that's the thing, is like each new release is really an opportunity for me to revitalize other stuff. And so I understand why someone would feel frustrated that an upgrade that's good for pigs would be in the Oxul set, but to me it really comes down to like that I care about everything, and so I'm like writing to try and make the whole game better every time I'm
there's lots so much consideration for all these different combo, you know, abilities as well.
But I'm really pleased with how the Oxul faction is coming together, and the way we'll be able to release a whole faction a whole new faction, you know, with not just the faction set, but the supporting characters. Like three packs in addition to the faction set. And that's going to really, you know, come in hot with a completely like fleshed out faction all in one go. I'm really excited about that.
And coming extra hot, and it sort of leads me to the next question. What are the differences when designing? Because this is the first time that, maybe is it? Is there another example? I feel like there is at least one. It's, what's it called? There is one example. The wild basilisk and the basilisk that comes in the...
Right, yeah, Wretched the mangrove basilisk. The basilisk.
Yeah. But the design difference between monsters and characters that you play.
Yeah.
Because we talked a little bit about it in regarding some what like makes a monster hard, mm-hmm. or which ways that we working within the system, you know, can adjust that. It's different from needing to balance the whole like spectrum of all of the other
characters. Yeah, that's an interesting thing because a lot of the characters or all of the Ogsoul character cards also have monster card versions. And so there are going to be pretty significant differences between those based on like what types of actions they have access to or whatever. And so even though they're pretty similar, the number of actions they have or the their armor class or whatever is changed based on the fact that a wild monster is, its stats are backed up by the fact or informed by the fact that it's generally not being controlled in a competitive by a player. Like it doesn't have that intelligence. So like we were talking about the monster versions having armor 3, whereas the play character card versions have armor 2. And it comes down to the fact that like when you're playing the that armor as a static defense is different when you have a player's intelligence behind it, being able to dodge or choose when to engage.
Especially which monster, upgrades too.
Yeah. Yeah. And also access to upgrades is another big point of it. Because, you know, whether or not a monster already, in my mind, already has a magic weapon or not, changes what the ability, how the ability's difficulty will be or whether it's magical. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's in the first, you know,
series. Yeah, you could see that in the... Yeah, you could see, you could kind of, if you take a really good look at the monster generator, you kind of see that like logic being informed throughout the way that their abilities stack up. Which is a fun way to that informed some of these original designs for these characters.
Yeah, so it was really fun. It was really fun to come in and be able to write that whole faction, and it came together really easy because so much it's informed by so much time I've spent thinking about the lore for these characters and also, you know, the game in general, like what would be an exciting area to develop more in this case, talking about warlords and barbarians, but even for the universal upgrades, which are always a big question mark, because when you think about an upgrade that anyone can take, you do have to like really consider balance in a lot of ways. So it's interesting. We'll see. You know, it's possible I'll make a terrible decision and we'll end up with characters that are
powerful.
Yeah.
We have been doing some play tests.
Yeah.
You know, and that's in the way that we kind of develop Relic Blade stuff now is shifted a little bit, which is nice, I think. You know, getting before, I think, especially, I don't know, I'm just thinking, I could be wrong, but I can see some of the characters or some of the design decisions that you made were made in a smaller vacuum in the earlier years when the Kickstarter machine was, you know, when those wheels needed to turn, you know, but now we've got, you know, the Discord community, tabletop simulator as a nice way to engage with actually playing the game and playtesting those things outside of just hanging out by yourself or, and trying to smash guys together.
Yeah, like we were talking about some characters from the earlier expansions, I think. I could have been bolder with the design choices, like for the Stoneskin Battleborn, for example. Mm-hmm. I could have been more a little more aggressive and try and make him more unique or stronger. Yeah. If I had more access to playtesters, you know, and with this release, even though the playtesting pool isn't huge, it's people that are like really thinking about it and giving me a little bit extra ideas to bounce off of, even if it's just like a simple feedback, like, oh, I don't know if this character can compete against that character as far as a choice, you know? And so then I can think about not just changing their abilities, but also like where they fit into the overall game. And obviously I've got a lot more experience as a Relic Blade designer since those old ones. But yeah, it's been really exciting to be able to take the leverage playtesting through Tabletop Simulator. But we did that with Kingdoms of Akkad.
And the Storms of Kral, the first teams. It's all making that process really refined.
Yeah, because like the special character, the team characters, where you have two guys represented on one card, that was a really big shift for Relic Blade. And potentially a dangerous development because it could really shift the overall meta to just be kind of, you know, get messed up. We play tested a bunch where it's like, well, what if we take this to like the logical extreme and you have just like all fish goblins? Like, what happens if you get like all 12 fish goblins on the table, right?
It's all so we did harpooners with the holes in the, the reaction throws.
Yeah, so we explored a lot of that stuff. And I don't think we would have been able to do it as thoroughly without Tabletop Sim.
Yeah, and it is interesting, like what you're saying, you're becoming a better designer too, and how Relic Blade is only getting better, you know? Whereas lots of new games have to kind of, because of the design, have to kick into a brand new edition. You know, we're just building on the previous framework, but all of your skills are just getting better. And it's just like, man, it's funny because it's like each wave of Relic Blade, and I haven't really been even able to play too much with the Kral stuff and like that new wave of upgrades. Yeah. And now when we've been playtesting with these upgrades on top, like, the Kral, I think one of the nicer kind of like big changes in its core deck was that it had so many interesting upgrades that didn't have keyword.
Right. Yeah. And, yeah, that was a big goal for that. Mm-hmm.
Set. And like that set in combination with this new set of runes, which are all kind of just adding on top of that. The space is just looking so wild, and it's from and thinking about the different ways to play too, also giving, because when you think early campaign like Relic Blade and you want to hire your smith, right, at the campaign in your base, and you're working pretty much towards, you know, magic weapon, maybe Cambrian ceramic blade at some point, you know, at the early waves, and artisan for different things. And now with the way that like healing herb is switched to equipment instead of like being a potion, there's all these new upgrades that have like different interesting effects that are cheap, really bring a whole new layer to the adding specialists to your camp or campaign mode. Because when most upgrades were like 2 and 3 points, and like a really good upgrade was 4, and there really wasn't a great amount, or if any, like if remember in the early days of Relic Blade, like a couple of first years, if that, because even like Writ of Justice, I think is 2 points, right? Which I think it should, is it, or is it, I'm not sure, but
use that card in a while.
Yeah, but point is, like, now with so many cheap, like 1 point interesting cards, the campaign phase of hiring specialists and stuff, I'm thinking about, I'm like, man, I'd be really doing that a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like when I was building campaigns earlier, and I would pretty much choose like one to just focus on, and then maybe I'll like level one, like another one.
Mm-hmm.
But I might make that merch, that camp one that you get all your followers at start at level one, a lot more enticing.
Yeah, it, there's a lot more. Writ of Justice is 1 point, by the way.
It is 1 point. Okay, yeah. Word. Yeah, that's a good 1 point card, dang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to be able to come through, and then the art looks really good, I think.
Oh my gosh, that's another thing where you just, it just because you're doing it more and more, it just looks cooler and cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I think people
are really, I'm really excited about this release. I think it's going to be great. Very cool stuff to explore. Very cool new miniatures. And the fact that it ties into a narrative solo adventure.
I know.
Adventure. It just, like, it's frustrating because it feels like it's taking absolutely forever to finish this.
Yeah.
So it's easy for me to feel frustrated sometimes. But it's also so cool. And, like, if I take a step back and look at what it is,
as all the stuff,
whole narrative adventure that leads from the last major release into this release with a continuous story and an all new faction release.
I know. Cool. Yeah, it's like an all new faction release, but it's so flesh. Like, I was thinking about this as a painter, where when I come up with the schemes and stuff, I have, since we've painted so many of them over the years now, and most of the factions are 4 characters,
mm-hmm.
there was a moment where I was like doing subconscious like palette math, and then I was like, wait, there's 10 guys.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's way more than 4. Yeah. I was just like, because I was thinking about the way that they were going to look, and generally with only like 4 characters in the thing, it makes it pretty easy to try and be like, all right, this is the shared element between them. But now with all 10 of these, there's an interesting element for me, because there's such a emphasis on magic within the faction that painting them is interesting, because you have like the martial element that you consider that what that looks like, they're like a team color, so to speak, you know. For example, I'm painting them with like bluish gray skin, kind of that what looks like your illustration one pretty much matches it exactly. Mm-hmm. And but I've got like a reddish desaturated kind of burgundy feel for the fabric, and a bronze, and but the insignia, like the little Algaroth eye belt on the Wrecker, and their eyes themselves, I went with the green, the same sort of green that you did for the like prototype paints and stuff. And that's a minimal element on the martial characters, right, the ones that fight. But then you switch over to the Seer, and the two eyes of Algaroth and the Gorgon, and you're totally into this fun magic. I'm like, I'm gonna paint them like really vibrant, like green, and try to like get this, you know, and this fun balance of it's kind of not really been in a Relic Blade faction from that painter perspective yet, you know. It's kind of like having a Temple of Justice faction where there's 2 clerics and they have multiple different spirit weapons or something.
Yeah, it'd be, yeah, it's like if Temple of Justice was mostly knights, but then also big holy creatures.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so what an idea.
Heck, it could happen, right?
Yeah.
But because that's what it is. It's like, it's barbarian apes with like iron helmets and brutal little hand weapons and then also aided, or I don't know if aid is
corrupted. Yeah, corrupted. Yeah, led.
Infiltrated by also these like horrible slime monsters, eyeball slime monsters. And then the seer is the bridge for that, where she's like, they're the first of the apes that became like priests of the eye. So very fun. Just like slime eyeball monsters.
Yes. And there's elements of painting Relic Blade factions that I always enjoy that you put into the design. We kind of talk a little bit about, you know, how when you design, you're thinking about paintability and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing that I'm generally mentioning a lot to people when we're at the conventions, and if they mention to me that they are more interested in painting than they are like playing, because, you know, depending on that, what type of player, Relic Blade's good for both, like playing, yeah. You know, I've seen people in the Facebook group that did just like simply one, like they painted their pigs like kind of a burgundy color and then dry brushed like them all like a brighter red, and that's it. They're just like all red, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the Temple of Justice were like all blue, and very simple, like just visual game piece style painting to just play the game, because Relic Blade's super fun for that. But if people are like, oh, I'm more of a painter, you know, and they come from a GW background where they like painting, but they're also sort of stuck into collecting an army that's, you know, 40 to, if not to 100 pieces or miniatures. And it's like Relic Blade with the small factions, and also in the combination that, even if you have, in most games that I can think of, having a duplicate figure doesn't really have much of a purpose. Mechanically, and also even collection-wise, you know, having two of the same guy doesn't really ever mean the whole. But in Relic Blade, generally, it's great because it does. You have two knights, you know, there's like no feel bad about that. You're just like, oh, sick. Yeah. Now I got two knights, you know. And from the painting perspective, why that's cool is because you don't have to really, you're not thinking about these massive armies. You just got two knights right now. And you're like, I want to paint this one with the green tabard because of X, Y, and Z. And I already painted this green. I've never painted, you know, I just bought this new paint from the store yesterday. You know, for example, like these new contrast paints that dropped recently. You just like that color. Ooh, I want to use this on this night. And it just has such a fun experimentation. Because it just allows you to have two nights that are completely painted differently. And if you want to include one night in your list, then you just look at which one you feel in that day. Ooh, I kind of want, you know, or if both.
Two nights in your list. Yeah, because you have that flexibility. And it's also clear that, like, they're, I don't know, it's like having two squads of tactical marines in your army. Like, I don't know, I haven't played 40K in a long time because maybe you're required to have. But, you know, it's not really a downside to have multiples because it has so much to do with like list composition and how you want your tactics to be. And then also as far as like alternate paint schemes go with on the same figures, I've always loved, when I was a kid, we'd play fighting games.
Oh yeah. Like alternate skins.
You'd like,
yeah, that's so fun to think. I've never made that connection.
You like try and unlock Chun-Li with a different outfit.
Yeah, that's rad. No doubt. It definitely has that. It definitely has that vibe. And it's interesting because I played lots of miniature games, painted tons of miniatures for games, But I've never encountered that kind of freedom with the figures in a way.
Yeah.
You know, that allows you to do that.
I try. I mean, and it goes, it could be, it might not always be to my benefit, but I try to foster that by showing in the card art
different
alternate color schemes, so that like when you have a card with that features the knight, that it would be painted one color, and then by the time you're seeing the knight in various upgrades or in different artwork, trying to make sure that it shown with different color schemes. But through the lore and through the information and through the illustration, rather than to try and like draw out the alternative schemes like in a natural way. So in the Ogg-Sul faction set, of the character cards have like one particular color scheme, but then with the upgrades I tried to show
the
ape clans with all kinds of different
skins and hair color. Yeah, and that's mm-hmm. also a super fun thing. It just makes the visual aspect looking at I guess what the word that I use is the dashboard, like your little relic play dashboard of cards. You just look at this cool art. I'm gonna put this guy right here. You know, it's fun to lay out. Look, think.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. Well, I'm stoked on this new set, and things are coming together. It's just a matter of like, holy crap! Everything takes so much. And then you know, once we get the pre-order virtue up, it's still gonna be months of, you know, ordering cards and packing and sorting cards and figures. So it's a big journey up ahead of me. I'm not even halfway done when you consider fulfillment.
Dang, maybe I can fly out. Maybe that's a good reason. We're back. Sweet. One other thing that I was thinking about just now on the topic of alternate figures and being able to still play, you know, still having a reason to have alternate figures, but still have great game mechanics, still have a lot of fun collecting and painting. But Relic Blade also has another little cool thing up its sleeve that serves both of those, and then that's the Paragon characters, the alternate, what we, to use the sort of, what in a video game analogy, what would that be? Would that be like, because we say alternate sculpt, but I swear we've talked in the past, you've kind of used a video game analogy.
Oh yeah, like skins.
Yeah, like skins, exactly. Like different skins for the character. And that is sort of similar to like a recolor, but what makes the Paragons different too is that it allows you to like explore a little bit of a specific Relic Blade character that's a type. Like for example, a Lady Arabella.
Aurelia.
Yeah. Yes. And how she is a questing knight. She has just a slightly little bit different card action.
Like one different skill. I think I took, for the Paragons, I took the third skill and flavored it and changed it a little bit. Gave them a new skill to try and capture what's unique about that individual version, rather than the archetype character card.
How many Paragons do we have right now?
Just three.
Three? Yeah. They're all
technically because they're like Vandas Greycloak could be considered a Paragon, mm-hmm. but he doesn't have different skills, and also the figure isn't available, so it doesn't really count.
He's just a Paragon in our hearts.
Yeah. Poor little buddy.
Yeah, so this past week, we was chilling, and I was wanting to, so the whole last week, like I was mentioned briefly at the beginning, I was working on the Ogg-Sul game, painting them live on my Twitch, and I painted one pretty much to completion, started working on some other stuff, and then Saturday came around, and I like to throw down a little bonus stream on the Saturday. And I was going to play just whatever. I want to play a video game. I want to play a game. I want to do something. And we were talking earlier in the day. And I was like, hey, do you want to play some tabletop simulator and play test some stuff? And you said yes, I would love that. So we got down and we played a little bit, play testing the Ogg-Sul. You went and played, made a list. Yeah, the first list had the chieftain. I don't think he had get on your. He had. But I don't know if he ever.
He had Iron. Yeah, the first game, because we played a game in the afternoon before we did the live stream.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the core faction set characters, the chieftain, the Iron Wrecker, and a team of warriors. And then I added to that the Gorgon, which is like a big,
big scary guy
monster. Yeah, like a large eyeball creature with horrible caustic.
And we were claws. Doing some playtesting with those. Yeah,
and
abilities.
Then also a one lizard hound companion. Right?
Uh-huh. For the chieftain. Yeah, yeah.
And then so we played that game. That went really well. That was a lot of fun. And then for the
Then I was like, hey, let's do it live.
I swapped out the chieftain for the seer, the clan seer. And the clan seer is a interesting character to the overall Relic Blade world.
Yeah,
she's a witch. Changes. She's a witch with the like spellcaster stat line of having 6 AD, speed 2, armor 1. But instead of having any combat spells of her own, she has 2 floating slime eyeballs that are like attached to her. Mm-hmm. Or not like physically attached, but like linked to her. So that, and they don't generate any AD themselves, but rather spend her AD to perform actions. So they're kind of like little floating nodes for her to control and
cast. A very familiar, fantastical concept, I think, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So she can do her combat potential is through Eldritch Bolt from the eyeballs, but her own self, her own body, like if the eyeballs get slaughtered, she doesn't have any offensive spells. So she's an interesting character, and man, I really enjoyed fielding her in that game we played because she was able to send an eyeball over to try and harass an objective and hold down one flank while I sent the whole like horde of barbarians over to try and claim another objective. It was a really exciting game. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and on the other end, for me, I was taking kind of Coral/Akkad element and mixing in upgrades to sort of just kind of balance those things. And I had spear gobs with, and it funnily enough, for their very first game, I gave them the stone rune. I mean, I know why, but
it's because we had talked about how it'd be good, but then we realized that
specifically them, specifically the goblins only have 3 health. So I was like, oh, the mouth,
they never get critical.
What did I switch it out for? Oh, it was Unbound because of the the deal with the Gorgon. And initially in the first game, the Gorgon, and we were playtesting the Trail of Goo, Trail of Slime ability that is kind of like an explosion AoE slime bind effect. And it was, it just cost 1 AD difficulty 1. And then after that game, we were like, maybe that should be a difficulty 3. Combine four, you know, it's kind of adjusted.
Because originally, because Trail of Slime was originally shorter range, like you had to be like right up touching the eyeball.
Yeah. You move like next to it.
But it was a passive ability. So it just anytime guys were near within 2 inches of them, they'd be bound. And then we were like, that's complicated. Like it's not like it works in the rules that after you move, then
you become bound. Yeah.
But then the question of like, well, do I end my move the moment I reach 2 inches? And it's like, well, that's not really how it works in Relic Blade, but I don't really want to have to like, I don't want people to have that mental load of it not being explained. So turning it into an ability meant that it would happen. And if it was passive before, just making it cost a die made sense. But then I also made it stronger. And so then, yeah, with the strength, I needed difficulty added to it. Anyways, it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's the that control ability of being able to put bind on characters. And so being able to run that Gorgon up, like, right in the middle of your troops and then bind them all really is quite good. And it's not new to the game. Like the Illusory Horror does that.
It does that, yeah. And that's pretty much all it does. That's its whole biz, mm-hmm. you know. And then...
And it's better at it. It's more terrifying than the...
Yeah. And there's another little one-point upgrade, the Slime Cap that I brought on those gobs. Because I brought Unbound to give them the +1 to bind. I knew if it's going to be Gorgon battle time, we're going to need to pole vault out of this freaking goo. So these guys are going to go in there with that. And then they had the Slime Cap, which is essentially a fun thematic explosive mushroom that is the Caltrops ability from the Infiltrator.
Yeah.
Bind 3, move 3 with the free disengage. And so those things I was trying to plan into the list. Okay, if we're going to go against the Gorgon, we need that. I also took for the first time the Akkad Magician. And just arcane protection, because most of the new runes are require that you use a dodge token or spend a dodge token to kind of trigger their effects. And it's a really fun risk reward. Like, there's lots of abilities in Relic Blade that when you're list building, you... Well, then we kind of talk about that sort of ethos. And I think... shout out to Owen Gaming with the Cooler for giving that little bit of insight about not wanting to take upgrades that have require something bad happen so that you gain a benefit from that upgrade. An example is giving someone the Tough upgrade or two.
Yeah, exactly. You just like an upgrade that requires that something already went wrong.
Yeah, to get a benefit.
Yeah.
And so there's, when we make upgrades, we kind of think about what's the frame of it. You know, does it require something bad to have happened for you to gain benefit? Or is it this sort of like a natural passive thing? You know, or do you have to sort of make a decision risk reward? In early in Relic Blade, sort of life, when there was just like the thief, and the thief had the backstab ability, this was kind of the first iteration of this kind of mechanic where I need a dodge token to survive, but I also want a dodge token to spend so that I can backstab your character. And it created that moment of weighing that immediate activation against potential, you know, activations next down the line for your character. And you're like, well, gotta do this thing. And with the new runes, there's a lot of that kind of fun decision making where you're like, I can spend the dodge token, boom, if this all goes off, it's deadly. Because I mean, I did that, and with especially with characters that have multiple attacks, for example Destroyer Pig, I gave him Fire Rune, which is damage bonus rune, and he has onslaught times 2. I would, and the only, even with only 3 AD, it still felt interesting, because I was like, all right, onslaught 2, I've got this rune, and these runes that augment damage take up weapon slot, by the way, but they just give a certain like damage edge, which was kind of always in the pocket, which was fun, because with the 3 AD, if I was already engaged, I would usually dodge, throw that first onslaught to see how it goes. You know, if the first onslaught does the trick, amazing. If it misses, that's a bummer. But you've got the second one, throw down one, you know, you hope for the same. With the rune, if depending on how that first onslaught goes, you know, it was like, okay, didn't go my way, spending the dodge, triggering the fire rune, and now I'm swinging that second onslaught. And I think twice when I did this particular activation, thinking about like the order of operations, that when I triggered the fire rune, he crit. And he was just exploding fools, and it was like, okay, that's 13 damage. It just felt so interesting.
That's what took the Gorgon out the first time. Mm-hmm. In the first game, it was the lightning bombs.
Yeah.
Or is it a thunder lightning? Oh, it's a thunder.
It was like a mix of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's one of the highest damage.
The plus six, yeah. Plus six.
So that took him out, and then you hit him with onslaught, which with the fire rune, which is plus six, because it's a plus four with an additional plus two. And then you crit on top of that, so it was plus eight.
Yep, it was just like big booms, yep. And some certain ideas like that, like the Clan Wrecker on the other side, the Ogsoul has that shock troop ability.
Yeah.
Which, if you have a dodge token on the target, he just gets a plus two damage. You could trigger that plus two damage. But you know, it's weird because they get to still spend the dodge and attempt to dodge exactly. It feels but
good. You're like, ha 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 ha, nice try, you tried dodging and now I'm gonna hit harder.
Because
when I did that against you, I was like, all right, coming in shock trooper, coming in hot. And I think I did fire rune also, so I was hitting on a four, and it's a plus four for the onslaught plus an additional, or no, he doesn't have onslaught. He has a giant hammer that's plus five, right?
Yes, difficulty seven. Five.
And then, so I came in that with the plus two, and then in another plus two with the fire. So it was five, six, seven, eight, nine, plus nine. And I was like, oh, you're going down, rolling my plus nine attack. But then you rolled 11. On your dodge tokens.
Yep. To see ya. Yeah, I think those might have been, because I remember at one point in the stream, I was like, chat, can we just acknowledge the true hero of my warband, which was like a single spear gob, just like a nine point model, just in the thick of like 47 points. just staying alive somehow. It's so funny. It was wild. Yeah, but it was really cool too. Great.
That was a really fun game. It's tough to explain on the audio exactly like a battle report.
Suffice to say,
we got to test a bunch of the cool new stuff and also just like really enjoy a game of Relic Blade together. So,
If you guys haven't
played Relic Blade on Tabletop Simulator, I really recommend it because it translates very well.
It does.
And Relic Blade is already such a like there's very little downtime and you don't have to move a ton of models. So as far as a miniature game that you get to play on Tabletop Simulator, it really works well because you aren't picking up 10 models.
Yeah, tons. You know, it's funny when I think about Relic Blade downtime, like the downtime exists. If like you're playing a game with me and there's downtime, that downtime exists for you because I'm looking at the game and going, okay. you know, like that's yeah, right.
When we play Relic Blade together, the downtime is us giggling and talking about
the story
of what happened.
One
goblin with a spear and it was the big, or like when you did the critical improvised attack with the carpet.
With the magic carpet on the Gorgon. Yeah, because that was another thing we were testing play. Was
no one should ever do that.
Sean was shaking his head visibly monster. And I couldn't even see him.
Big monster. If you guys can close your eyes. A big, horrible slime monster, probably 12, maybe 15 feet tall. and it's surrounded by spearmen. Well, they're goblin spear gobs, a big destroyer pig swinging his big sword around, and they've been fighting the whole game.
It's on one HP, its last leg.
And then the magician flies in on his magic carp and he casts his powerful spells. He's casting lightning bolts, no damage, casting thunder bombs, no damage. And so, I mean, that's it. You know, you fought against the big monster. That round of combat is over. But instead, Malev decides, oh, I can just charge with the magic carpet and have the magic carpet headbutt the thing.
Do an improvised, the absolute move of desperation.
All right, like mathematically, the lowest I can roll is a 1 plus 3 armor.
Yeah.
And the lowest you can roll is a 1. Plus nothing.
Yep.
So, like, you're already, like, if you roll a 6 and I roll nothing, you're, like, barely doing any damage to it. But instead, you come in with a critical hit.
No, it was a regular. It was a regular. It wasn't a crit. I hit with a 5. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
I hit with a 5. It was just that you rolled the 1 and you only had the 1 HP left. So, yeah. It was like, boop, you know, this... The magic carpet, it was like I could see the way that the magic carpet was animated in old school Aladdin. It was kind of like just coming through and just throwing like a real tight, like curled Persian carpet right hook fist to the back of the Gorgon, hit him with the tassels.
You know? The little tassel hand.
Yes.
That's what it was. That's exactly what happened.
And right that... It was so surprised because it had nothing to do with, you know, chances and figuring out, because what was going on in that moment is I mentioned this just a moment ago, but we were also playtesting the new scenario that comes in the new faction pack. And because if you don't know, dear listener, for some reason, each Relic Blade faction that comes with a scenario. On the inlay, and they're all like uniquely themed and kind of match the fact. So this one is a raid on like exterior camp after the Ogg Sul have like burst from the shattered Coral Mountains and start attacking these like outposts that are surrounding those areas. And so it's a sort of asymmetrical attack versus attacker defender one, where the attacker is trying to steal supplies and kill like camp workers and just cause havoc, you know, destroy stuff. And the defender is trying to keep those guys alive and repair things and secure vital supplies before the enemy does. And so in this instance, I was the defender and I needed to, no, I was the attacker in the second game actually. So I needed to take out these little camp followers that Sean was running around. And I'm sitting there and I have my Cod Magician. He's got the fastest speed. One of the fastest character in the game with speed 7. And so I'm like feeling good about it. I'm thinking in my head, all right, got the dice right. I'm going to move him here. I'm going to shoot the Gorgon. The Gorgon only has 1 HP and I really need this thing to go down. I'm going to focus my lightning rod, difficulty 4. And bazap. Oh, rolled a 2 and a 1. Got a 3. Okay, that's awesome. All right, and so now I'm thinking, well, I need to use the lightning rod on the Gorgon, kill the Gorgon, so I can use my thunder bombs on the little camp worker guy that's running away. If I can do even one of these, it'd be a successful turn. But as my magic carpet guy went over the wall, apparently he got like bucked and he just couldn't throw the bombs correctly. Because then I'm sitting there, okay, I failed to take out the Gorgon. It still needs to go down. I can take care of the camp work later. Thunder bombs, Gorgon! Hwah! Roll a 6 and a 1. 7. Difficulty 8. Okay. And that's when I'm sitting there and I go, everything has failed. You know, like cue, like meme, like sad music. Dun, 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 dun. You know, and just like it goes black and white and zooms in slow on me. I was like, I just have nothing. Like, you almost just lost me the game, little Cod Magician, with those rolls right there, you know?
Well, so, that's the thing. Is like he had an important job, which was go and sabotage that guy mm-hmm. take out the camp follower, don't worry about the Gorgon. But he was so focused on revenge that he ended up
just
charging in to like hit the guy.
Because after he failed, I was like, I have one AD left. I could dodge him and try and maintain this, you know, battle plan, or I can just play it by heart, you know. And I love that Relic Blade rewards the cinematic play it by heart type of play, because as you said, and I think on the clip, because I'll share, we could put the clip in the description and even link to the VOD of our playthrough, where you're like, this, I don't know what you said exactly, but you're like, this is not a sound tactical decision. And I was just like, it's not. And you're like, when you said something like, you just want revenge. And I'm like, no, I just want any. And I just like roll in, and then just as you rolled the one, and dramatically, if you play Tabletop Simulator, dear listener, you'll know that the one wonky thing about Tabletop Simulator is its dice physics. That's probably the one thing that's a little strange and that is the biggest departure from like playing a game. But everything other than that, you know, movement and checking line of sight and moving models and stuff feels super tactile, like it would normal. But the dice landed in such a way where it was on, I think it was on like a 3, and then it just slowly creeps over to the 1.
Yeah, like rolling dice on the moon.
Yeah, and then that 1 came up, and oh my gosh, it was so funny. I was like, I cannot believe that the carpet just, you know, because, yeah. I mean,
anytime it can happen that you'll roll a 6 and they'll roll a 1, but it's just like, it's just such a dumb thing to gamble on.
Exactly, yeah.
Especially with your 26-point magician, and he upgrades on him too. You're like, here's my 30-point guy. What if he karates you?
The thing that's the most heartbreaking about is that he succeeded, right? And it was like, oh my gosh, star moment. And I'll tell you what, the recovery phase came by and you rolled the dang 6 for the Gorgon, and my heart sank.
You had knocked out the clan warrior, so
it gave him the dodge token. The
dodge token, and then stood up with one with health, the dodge spare, token. But also with a dodge token, so he wasn't even vulnerable.
It was just like complete hype to utter disaster right there. And I tell you what, if your Gorgon didn't like recover in that role, I'd probably be painting the cabbages right now. You know, I'd be I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest guy ever. But not only that, because a cop magician was too proud by his splendid carpet karate pack that he stuck around, and then I lost initiative. The Iron Wrecker just comes in with the giant hammer and just clobbers to oblivion that poor goblin. Like, he got team rocketed like into the sky ting type.
Yeah.
Yo, he just got batted out the frame. And I was just like, oh, he went from so cool to just utter demise in a moment's notice.
But that wrecker had been like hunting him all game, trying to keep up.
Yep.
Just lumbering after him. And
yeah, because he got thunderbombed. Like, he got thunderbombed early.
Speaking of not good tactics and just pure revenge, that whole character took a hit from the magician in like turn 1 or turn 2, and then spent the rest of the game just sort of like dragging his foot, trying to get close. Goblin.
Yeah, it
worked though.
Yeah, man. And then we were able to, we adjusted some of the things in the scenario.
The thing about like playtesting, you know, you're like, we're setting up. Everything made some sense when I wrote it, and then we're setting up, and you're like, wait, does that happen now? Oh, adjust that wording. You know, like, that's the cool thing about being able to actually get it on the table is you can, oh, you know, that there's a little typo there. There's a little thing here.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Oh, how many inches? Is that too many inches? Yeah. So I think, yeah, it was a really super fruitful Saturday, because normally I don't work on Saturdays, but being able to play test was A, very fun, and B, very, very productive.
Yep, and I'm right now I'm painting some Ogsoul guys, the Algaroth, and this week on the Twitch be painting up, and man, I'm sure I'm thinking about all types of cool video content that would be fun to make with all of these new cool Ogsoul. And man, when people get their hands on it, doing something like a cool paint contest or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Paint their Ogsoul.
Yeah, you know, one thing ways. That I don't know that I'll get around to it, but one thing I always loved in is little painting guides.
Yeah. And,
you know, whether it's as dramatic as like showing different Space Marine chapters or as simple as, you know, a little uniform guide. It'd be fun to like make a little reference to each of the different types of clans that exist.
Yeah, and we hopefully we'll have a chance to do that in the similar pamphlet style that you've done for the
Sludge.
Well, no, in the way that when we did the Corral booklet, you had like all the characters sort of drawn right, little yeah. alternate, and then mm-hmm. in the solo there's a little bit of that too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I have drawings, little drawings like that in the Catacombs of Corral, the adventure book.
Yeah.
But not with different paint schemes, just the little like TTS style, like small drawings of them.
Yeah. So. That's cool. All right then. Sean, man, it's been great. I'm super excited about getting these Ogsoul out to you. I'll probably also take home photos.
Oh, that'd be good.
Because these guys are neat. I'm painting them, having a blast. The traditional Relic Blade. You know, I think the people who paint Relic Blade know that painting Sean Sutter sculpts is fun. These guys are keeping up that tradition. I'm excited to see what people do with
it. Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's in the age of COVID, everything's taking longer and longer to get done. But man, I'm excited. Just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other and not get discouraged that it takes so long to get new stuff out.
Yes, but. Y'all. So keep on encouraging us in the comments and in our posts. And much love. Thanks for checking out Relic Buds and supporting my man Sean Sutter and Metal King Studio.
Yeah, until the next time, everybody. Thank you.
Cheers, y'all.